States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, we're going to be hearing from the USEF's Dressage Technical Advisor and Chef d'Equipe, Robert Dover, as he reviews this year's Rio Olympic Games. But before we hear from Robert, we'll be joined in just a moment by Stefan Peters, who'll be telling us about his fourth Olympic Games. And we would like to remind you that, of course, the views of guests and the host of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. We begin with an item of news this week, as the results are in from the 2016 US Dressage Festival of Champions, which took place this past weekend at the Lamplight Equestrian Center in Wayne, Illinois. The competition was divided into two this year, with the Pony Rider, Junior Young Rider and Young Adult Brentina Cup Championships all held this weekend, along with the Markel USEF Young and Developing Horse Dressage National Championships and the USEF Dressage Seat Medals. The winner of the Markel USEF Developing Horse Prix Saint-Georges National Championship was Adrian Lyle with Horizon. Jane Carroll and Sunshine Tour won the Markel USEF Developing Horse Grand Prix National Championship. Anna Buffini had a banner weekend. She won the National Championship in the USEF Young Adult Brentina Cup Dressage National Championship presented by Dressage Today, riding Sunday Boy. And she also took the Reserve National Championship title, riding Wilton II. The AGCO USEF Junior Dressage National Championship title went to Jenna Upchurch with Greystoke. Endel Otts and Lucky Strike won the Markel USDF 6-year-old National Championship. And in the USEF Dressage Seat Medal Finals, the 13 and under division was won by Avery Allen, and Alison Hopkins won the 14 to 18-year-old division. And you'll find the full results from this year's US Dressage Festival of Champions on the USEF's website at usefnetwork.com. The second competition for the Grand Prix and Intermediaire 1 National Championships will be held at Paso Robles Horse Park in Paso Robles, California, from October the 12th through the 16th. And now, our first guest this week is Stefan Peters from San Diego, California. Stefan and Legolas 92 were members of the US bronze medal winning team, and this was Stefan's fourth Olympic Games. I caught up with him shortly after he arrived home from Rio. I hope recovered from all that excitement now, Stefan, have you?
Yes, I have. You know, I've been home a little bit sooner than my awesome teammates. So they actually went home today on the 24th, and I came home about 4 or 5 days ahead of them.
Well, a big congratulations. Enormously satisfying for you, even though you've done a few Olympic Games. What does this one mean to you with Legolas?
Chris, it means the world to me because 20 years ago in Atlanta, we won a team bronze medal. And, you know, it was here and there a bit of a tricky road with Legolas. And all I could think of here and there is what if we have at the Olympics a test like we had here and there in Florida or at some of the freestyles? You know, what if he's noise sensitive? So as much as you try to put that aside, that was always a bit of a worry. And when he put in on his first day 77% in the Grand Prix at the Olympic Games, I was just beside myself. So this bronze medal really means a lot. If some people ask me if it is as good as gold, I would say yes, for sure.
Now, we all know, you know, these dressage horses, they just get better with maturity. Let's talk about going into these games for him, Stefan. How did you feel about his preparation compared to other major events that you've prepared him for at this stage in his career? Because at 14, he's pretty much peaking, isn't he?
Yeah, he seems to be peaking, and I just appreciate so much what he's done for us. But the preparations went extremely well. I think Robert did an excellent job picking shows such as Rosendahl, Rotterdam, and then Aachen. Rosendahl was a bit of a quieter atmosphere, which was a great start. And in Rotterdam, the atmosphere was quite electric, and going around the arena coming into the Grand Prix, Legolas was still a bit affected by the atmosphere. But then down centerline, coming down centerline, he was wonderful. But since we had that little bit of a nervous reaction coming into Rotterdam, we decided that it would be the right thing to do for him to compete at Aachen. I felt like the horses of the of my teammates were pretty solid, but again, I just wanted to eliminate any situation where he might act up. That's why we did Aachen as well, and I think it paid off. He was not a single bit tired in Rio. He traveled well, and you know, in general, it was just such a wonderful training situation, a very harmonious training situation with my teammate in Belgium. It was just it just meant so much to win a bronze medal with this team. They're just a bunch of awesome people, and honestly, I've said it many times, but I couldn't be more proud of them, and it was an honor to be part of that team.
Let's talk about the Grand Prix then, and actually through these three competitions, Stefan, if you would, and talk about the atmosphere there, because we know the crowds were not huge for an Olympic Games, and South America is different in many ways, a different environment completely. But talk us through each of those classes for you and how they all prepared and rode for you, and if they met your expectations each day.
Yeah, I think they went above the expectations because, first of all, the venue was incredible. I've seen four Olympic venues, and it was at least as nice as it was in London. We just had a bit more space in Rio. There were lots of arenas. It never got crowded in the warm-up. The stalls were fantastic. There was for each nation, there was a little bit of a separate area. And it was just a really, really wonderful venue. And then going into the first Grand Prix, the first day after, say, the bigger, because I felt we came in there a bit as underdogs, because in Rotterdam, the Dutch team beat us. Sweden was very strong. Spain had a strong team. Denmark. So I honestly felt like a bit of an underdog team. And the pressure, even though we've done previously three Olympic Games, the pressure was huge. And I just kept telling myself, I just don't want to let my teammates down. And we went in there. And again, for Legolas to do such a fantastic Grand Prix was amazing. On the second day, the Grand Prix special, Legolas lost a little bit of his balance in the left half pass, but recovered very quickly. And then right after that, my belt buckle broke, actually, during the test. And I could just feel my pants sliding down a little bit, and I said, oh my gosh, I hope this doesn't end up in a wardrobe malfunction. But on the last center line, my belt was sliding, and I actually, with my left hand, grabbed my belt, did the last center line, and then I think it was Gary Rockwell, who was at sea, when I saluted, I actually pulled my belt out, and he gave me this funny look. But thank God there was no wardrobe malfunction. And when I came out of the ring, I talked to Will briefly, and he had this serious look on his face, and he said, "Stefan, just that you know, getting undressed at an Olympic venue is highly frowned upon." So thank God that didn't happen.
Does it mean that you were breathing though, Stefan? Then you know your nerves had relaxed, and you were definitely breathing.
I certainly was, yeah. And then, you know, Legolas did again a wonderful freestyle. Very exciting. There's a couple little things that I added to the degree of difficulty. And, you know, Legolas was first in the ring, but, you know, it was a great freestyle. So all 3 days were just exactly what I had hoped for and dreamed of.
And you mentioned the atmosphere, of course, it's different at every Olympic Games. How did you feel that Legolas responded to that as the competition wore on? Did it lift him at all, or did he not respond to the atmosphere?
This was actually one of the first shows where I felt like Legolas was exactly the same as he was in the warm-up. So going around the arena sometimes when I feel that tension, like enter in walk or in rising trot, and I came into the arena, I was able to ride another little extension, a transition to the passage, and then in we went.
So 74 there in the special, and then on the final day, that freestyle, tell us a little bit more about that. Of course, that went to 79. I'm sure you were hoping to reach that 80 mark, but just eluded you this time. Why do you think that was?
You know, like I mentioned, going first into the arena, I'm not sure if it always helps, but the bottom line is he was so wonderful, clearly one of his best freestyles. And we added a double pirouette before the transition to the Piaf. And I added again the two half pirouettes in Piaf before the final salute. So it was technically a very difficult freestyle. And he did some wonderful extensions, clean changes. In fact, he did all three tests without a single flying, without a single mistake in the flying changes. So it was huge. And to deliver that for the team was honestly what I was dreaming of.
So now looking back at these games, Stefan, what have you most appreciated about them? What do you think your biggest takeaways will be from this experience with him?
In general, I have to say, There's this one moment that really stood out, and that's not so much during the performance with Legolas, but that was when Laura actually came down center line, you know, because we knew exactly what type of score Laura needed to get. And I was sitting there with my friend Tom Myers and Michael Barrison, and Laura started with an 79%. In between, it went up to 80, but it never dropped below 78% during the whole test, looking at her average. And I kept telling the guys, I said, you know what, this could really happen. We might get a medal. And then her last center line, even if Laura would have missed somehow the last passage, last PF or the last halt, it still would have been good enough to get a team medal. And that was the moment when it really sunk in that we really did this. And I'm sitting here almost still getting a little teared up about this. It was such an amazing moment that we've waited for 20 years for. And for Legolas to add two solid scores for that team bronze medal was simply incredible. You know, I said it before, I'm almost 52 years old, but if you wanted to see a 10-year-old boy bawling his eyes out in the stands, that was me there. It was just incredible. It was truly one of those moments we live for.
It sounds as if it really was one of the high points of your career. So 4 Olympic Games under your belt, Stefan, and being an alternate as well. Now, what do we expect from Stefan Peters after so many Olympic Games? Are you going for a record here? Are you just going to keep going? You mentioned your age, you see, and I couldn't help but draw attention to that.
Sure. No, that's only logical. And, you know, I mean, I'm just one of those really lucky guys who has another wonderful horse right behind Legolas with Rosie. And Shani did a wonderful job with her while she went home before Europe. Shani's been riding her, and the last week has been incredible with her. It's almost to the point where she said, look, why didn't you take me to the Olympics? That's how well she went. So if my body holds up the way it's been doing, knock on wood, And if Rosie and Legolas keep going the way they are, then we might think about Tokyo. But I think that that might be it. So I'm looking for another 4 years of supporting another amazing team, hopefully. And from there, we'll see.
Well, I'm bound to ask, since you talk about, you know, keeping your body in shape, I know you do other things to get fit. Did you do anything specifically preparing for these Olympics, Stefan, to help your own personal fitness?
Yeah, actually, credit needs to go to my buddy Günther. When we were in Europe, we had the chance to keep our fitness in the squash court. And Günther and I, we played daily. And that clearly brought my cardiovascular fitness up. And there was actually a couple of days where Günther beat me. So it was quite competitive. But most of the time, I was ahead of Günther. But the amazing part is we played for about 45 minutes to an hour. And when I sat down to just recover a little bit, Günther would go, come on, let's work out. Let's lift some weights. So, you know, he might be a little older than I am, but he's in even better shape than I am. So a huge thank you to Günther. And then our hotel was about 5 miles away from the training facility in Belgium. And most of the days I rode my bike there. Some days I ran there. So quite a bit of physical fitness that went into the games before.
Well, that was true athletic preparation for these games then, Stefan. Very impressive. Congratulations on your training effort then, and an inspiration to all our USDF members. If they're going to make it to the Olympics for 4, maybe even 5 or 6 Olympic games, then to follow Stefan's example of how to get fit.
There you go.
Wonderful. Very good. Well, congratulations again, Stefan, on that bronze medal. I know it meant a lot to you, and I appreciate you taking
really
the time
did to
come on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. Always fun talking to you.
Robert Dover joins me now, fresh back from Rio and hardly touched the ground, I'm sure, still celebrating that bronze medal. Congratulations, Robert.
Well, thanks very much, Chris. We're really, really excited and very proud.
You must be. And I know in your own career, you've collected a few bronze medals. So you're looking for one of a different color. But this was a tough competition. Only 6 teams there in that final tussle. We want to talk about the team's performance, of course, and the individual performances. So why don't we start, actually, first of all, because I know as we speak, horses are still in quarantine. As far as you know, everybody's arrived home safely?
Yeah, so our horses actually went back to our base in Belgium, and this was because we have in America a special quarantine for something called screwworm, and it's 2 weeks of lockdown. So rather than have them brought back to the United States and have to go into a lockdown where the riders couldn't even basically get to them at all, we instead took them back to Europe, where they're about 6 days in Belgium at our base without really being in any quarantine at all. And then we'll be coming home as normal horses out of Europe with just a normal 2-day quarantine. So it's really, you know, perfect.
Oh, that's a wonderful transition. Yes, absolutely. Well, let's start with the competition itself and how the horses arrived, how the preparation was, and your impressions of the venue and what you were faced with when you were on the ground there preparing for the games in the early days there, Robert. Why don't you give us an overview of your impression?
Okay, well, you know what? We got there. We weren't sure exactly how it was going to look because the last time I had been there was on the sort of mission to scope everything out in March. And when I tell you that it was nowhere close to ready in March, the area that was our stable was just a pad. There was no stable whatsoever there. It was literally just a cement pad. So, and then the arenas, the footing was in, and that one main cement structure with the overhang was in, and that was it. So when I tell you that when we got there, we were so happy and truly overjoyed with what we saw as state-of-the-art stables, perfect footing, a wonderful group of volunteers, as well as, you know, a top-notch staff. And truly, everybody could not have been nicer and more helpful to us. So with regard to the venue, I could not say one negative thing about it at all. It was as nice as any Olympic venue that we've been to.
And how did the horses arrive and start their, you know, getting ready just in those final days before the competition began? Were you happy with how everyone landed?
They landed super. They were vanned over to the venue without any problems, and everything was very smooth in the first days. We let the horses have a bit of rest and then got right to the work of doing our final training. And of course, we knew that we would have some time in the main arena, which we used pretty strategically to ascertain what needed to still be worked on with each particular combination. And the personal trainers that were there along with me, Debbie McDonald, who's just, you know, the very, very best and like my right hand. And I always say, you know, Debbie's not only attached to me at the hip, but really at the heart. And we're a really super team as far as, you know, dealing with the athletes and their horses. And then Michael Barazone, who's there for Roosevelt with Allie Brock. And he was also just really great, you know, to deal with. And truly, we had such a great group with Hallie Griffin as our team leader and Will Connell, who made sure that when we walked into those stables, they were perfect and everything was prepared for the eventing team that got there right before us and our team and the jumping team, so that really there was very little to stress over for the riders, because everybody did their job to make sure that they really just needed to concentrate on riding, you know, fantastically and having their horses go well. So I would say that each day presented itself exactly as we hoped, and the horses and riders looked more and more confident, which is, of course, what you're always hoping for. And we watched our main competitors and, again, felt with each day that we had a greater chance to deliver. And you know, everything went down even maybe a little bit better than we could have hoped for.
Well, certainly sounds like ideal preparation then going into that Grand Prix. Robert, let's talk about those performances. We've got the highest placed American rider, of course, Laura Graves, as she was at the Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games 2 years ago. So some expectation on her, maybe a little pressure, a bit more experience now, just beating Stefan with Legolas, just marginally there in the Grand Prix. But I think before we do that, let's begin with the rookies, if you like. Those first timers on an Olympic team, who had that extra pressure and maybe nerves, expectation? How did they face all of that? And what was your end takeaway from their performances to start the competition?
Well, I would say that the best thing is that this group, along with our wonderful traveling reserve, Shelley Francis with Doctor, had spent 3 months at our base in Belgium, Stud Farm Behindhoof, and you know, which is just a beautiful place owned by this guy Rob von Pinebrook, and he just made us so welcome, and the facilities again were beautiful. But those 3 months, we went off to several shows with each of the competitors, and what happened was in the selection process for the team, these riders became stronger and stronger on very big shows and very tough shows that included Rotterdam Compiègne, Rosendahl, and Aachen. And when you are prepared that well on some of the biggest shows in the world, you go to Rio knowing that you've already beaten a great number of the riders and horses from the countries who you're competing against. So even those who were competing for their first time didn't feel as stressed because they know that they had competed against a lot of those riders in Compiègne and in Rotterdam already, and even beaten some of their biggest competition. So I think that with Allie starting out in the Grand Prix, she knew that she was our lowest ranked going in, and is a really tough lady as far as keeping her nerves together. She's just, you know, cool and wonderful to deal with, and, you know, put in a very, very good first ride for us. And so that worked out really well. And then Casey, who had won in Compiègne with 77 point something percent, close to 78%, and the judges just adored her and Dublay, the result was also like a 75 plus percentage on that first day. And so we felt very comfortable after that first ride, knowing that we had Stefan and Laura the second day. You know, you always are hoping that your strategy works, but putting Laura in the anchor position was something that I went over in my mind so many times in the weeks and days leading up to the draw. And I spoke with Debbie McDonald about it. I spoke with Stefan about it. And, you know, I really asked the riders advice as well, if they felt that it was a good idea, because I wanted them to feel like this decision was something that we made together. And in the end, everyone believed that Laura, having done so well in the Grand Prix Special in Rotterdam and won it, and also being our national champion and on this great horse for Dottie's, we felt that our best chance was to put her as our anchor at the end, and Stefan going in third would just, you know, give her maybe some distance that she could know that it wasn't going to be a huge pressure and she could just go for it. And that's exactly how it worked on both days. I mean, when Laura went into the Grand Prix Special, we knew that she needed a 73.6% to clinch the bronze medal. And that was because all the others had contributed to the medal by then. But we didn't want to tell her, so I said, Deb, she only needs a 73.6, which made Deb relax a little bit. And then we said, but we're not going to tell her because we want her to go for an 80. And so the whole time, she knew that we wanted her to go for the 80. She wanted to go for the 80. And in fact, when she finished her test, I turned around and I said to Deb and others, if that is not an 80, then they don't know what an 80 is. And sure enough, she got it.
Yeah.
So we were thrilled.
You must have been absolutely thrilled, of course. And so in summary then, from the Grand Prix and then winning that medal, I mean, as I said earlier, Robert, you're used to winning team bronze medals. And I'm sure
right
now with your experience as the chef de keeps, the team coach, you know that you're inching ever closer, higher up the podium, and that will change in the future. So what were your biggest takeaways from the team performance? If you look at it in perspective then of the growth of a dressage here over the since the last Olympic Games, if you will.
Yeah, I think that what I took away the most from it was that we created 3.5 years ago a 58-page prospectus, if you will, that was called Roadmap to the Podiums. And it's something that I did as my first action as the chef de keep and technical advisor for the United States. And in it, I sort of outlined for each year what my markers would be and what I hoped to achieve with each year up until the Olympics and through the Olympic Games. And we really stuck to the storyline perfectly, because pretty much everything that I had outlined 3.5 years ago was what ended up coming to pass. And so I think what I take away from that is that what it took for us during the 20 years of continuous medals that I was privileged to be on the team with so many of my colleagues with, we did again. We went over to Europe each year. We took many horses and had multiple tours in Europe over the last years of horses and riders. And we chipped away at this block and saw what we needed to do clearly, and then did it and accomplished it. So I think that that if we continue on a path where we fund programs that are world-class programs, from the youngest of our kids on ponies through the young horse program, a program for riders that are U25 and developing Grand Prix, and then, of course, our elite international program in the future, as we have now over these last 3.5 years, and even enhance the lower end of the pipeline to where we have even a sort of a grander vision for the youth and the young horse programs, then I think that we'll have the ability to be assured of sustainable excellence. And that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Well, talking about excellence, let's round up the freestyle there. No surprises, really, with the top three, and Laura just missing out on getting on that podium. But let's talk about her those performances and what your takeaways were from them. You know, if you compare them from earlier in the week, the Grand Prix and the Grand Prix Special, and how they recovered during the rest and how they came out after that rest for the final freestyle, Robert.
Sure. Well, I will say this, that first of all, I could tell you that when I left after Rotterdam, right before I did, I had a private meeting with each of the riders, and I just wanted to give them my thoughts when I knew I was leaving for a week and that I was coming back for Aachen. And so when I sat with Allie Brock, I said, you know, Allie, I feel like you're thinking that you're just going to be there for the two tests, for the Grand Prix and the Special, and that I know that you know that you're going to be our leadoff rider. And I just want you to realize that you're on as good of a horse as anyone, and that you have the ability to go to that very last day. And I, you know, she sort of rolled her eyes, and she appreciated that I said that, but I know that she didn't truly believe it. And so what was really funny was that, you know, on the day before she went into the freestyle, she said, okay, I just have to tell you, you were right. And she had not practiced her freestyle during the entire year. She had only done the one time that freestyle in order to qualify for within our selection process, because you had to do it once. And I think she had done it last year at Devon. And that was the only time she had practiced her freestyle, other than doing an exhibition at Washington in the international. So she was, you know, marching around, running through her music all day and all night the 2 days before, and but wanted to leave her horse fresh. So really, you know, just did the very best she could. And that very best was for her, by far, a personal best of over 76%. And so she was totally thrilled. Stefan drew first to go, and out of that 18. And I tell you, he's such an incredible team player. He is, you know, having Stefan on it in any team is an enormous asset, because he brings not only his amazing ability as a show ring rider, but also he's wonderful with the other athletes. he builds them all up and makes them feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves. And so when he drew First to Go, you know, which was not where I would hope that he would draw, but he even said the day before, if he drew First, he would have no problem with it because he's really just going for the joy of it now. And he went in and laid down just a wonderfully clean ride. And I have to say that had that ride gone later in the program, in the show, I think he would have been easily over 80%. But because it was First to Go, you know, he had several judges that gave him 81 or whatever, and then a couple of judges that gave him 77, 78. And so he ended up just a hair under 80% as the first rider to go that day. So we were all just thrilled and proud of everything that Stefan had accomplished. And I know that he right now is home and really overjoyed with the result. And then there's Laura, who truly just did the most beautiful job. But, you know, ours, like, you know, it's a sport where so much of what the judges have seen in the past is how they look at these riders and horses. And in retrospect, having looked at all of it, I would say that and there are many people that felt afterwards, you know, that Laura deserved to be on the medal podium. I think that Laura's 85+ percentage result was not only 5 percentage points above any that she had gotten in the past, but it was just a testament to the beauty of this combination going around. And the fact that she was fourth in no way makes me feel like she lost anything from it. And I do think that in the future, I would say that in the next year, we'll see Laura and even some of our other combinations looking like individual medal winners for the next World Equestrian Games. I think that we'll see where some of these riders are able to very possibly win or be in the top few in Aachen and the biggest shows of the world. And I think that that Laura, along with some of the others that competed and some that are just starting to compete in Grand Prix, will take America to for sure a higher medal podium, and maybe in 4 years they'll certainly give the Germans and anyone else on top a run for their money.
Well, we know they're obviously firmly confirmed now in the mid-80s. It's just a matter of climbing up. There's not many that get into the 90s after all, is there, Robert?
There was the one.
There was the one.
And she is so deserved that. And I was so thrilled for her because Charlotte's just a great, great lady. And that horse sets itself apart still now. And, you know, to go out on top like that with 2 gold medals in a row and as world champion, I mean, it's just a fairy tale story that you couldn't write any better. So I certainly applaud her and also their team and the German team, for that matter. I think that they were wonderful. And, you know, I have to say the Dutch really went for it, tried very hard despite some difficult luck with losing one of their horses early on. And the Swedes were wonderful to watch as well, the Danes as well, some of the Spanish horses. This was a competition just chock filled with incredible athletes, both 2- and 4-legged. And I've never seen the standard higher. And that made Rio, for me, very special as an Olympic Games. Because if you look at the scores going down to 70%, I can I could be wrong, but it maybe was down to number at least around 38 horses that went 70% or higher. And now, and to be like even competitive, you had to be above 75%. And I think that it may have been maybe 17 horses that were able to achieve 75 and higher. And we've never had anything like that. So this was, and to have five horses go over 80% in a Grand Prix special, that is just, you know, amazing. And when you think of what it was like even 10 years ago, no less, you know, in when I was competing from 84 to 2004, there was no such thing as anything but maybe the number one horse going somewhere close to that.
Very true. Of course, the bar is ever higher now. And so I just want to just get your impressions, though, of that Olympic Games with all your experience at the Games, because we heard so much speculation and rumor about the venue and the crowds and so on. Was there the kind of atmosphere that you were expecting? What were the crowds like, and did they get ever better throughout the week?
Yeah, I think probably the saddest part for me was that with a great venue and such great competition for dressage, the crowds were very sparse, and the same for eventing. Even show jumping, which is sort of a Brazilian traditional sport, because they've medaled, the Brazilians come out and they love the sport of jumping. The venue was almost full to capacity for jumping, but not completely full, and was very sparse for dressage. Even on the last day of the freestyle, we were not as full as the first qualifying day for jumping. So that was sad, and that was because of all of the things that were factual and the things that the media kept on, you know, telling everyone around the world. So who you had at the Olympic Games were Brazilians. You had, and of course, the owners and families of the riders from around the world, but you didn't have the kinds of numbers of people that came from all over, from around the world to watch the sport as you would in any other games, or even in a place like Aachen on an annual basis. And that was probably the only thing that marred what otherwise was a perfect Games as far as our sport goes. You know, as far as other things with the Olympic Games, there's certainly the things that caused people to stay away were to a certain degree true. It is a place that is right now in a great deal of jeopardy as far as, you know, the political situation there, the social problems that they have, the problems with their water, which was extremely evident, the problems with the fact that there is so much poverty. And what you don't see that if you're in Copacabana or Ipanema or even Baja, you know, on the beach directly in these grand hotels and eating in great restaurants. But where we were out in Deodoro, it was very evident that the greatest amount of population is extremely poor. And with that comes, you know, a lot of things that cause someone to reconsider whether they want to go to a place like that. Transportation was very difficult for a lot of people. And, you know, so I was just saddened, as I say, that the people didn't come, because if they had come, they would have seen that the problems were surmountable, and the end result would have been that they would have truly had a remarkable time watching incredible sport on a top-class menu.
So final thoughts now. You mentioned earlier about how excited you are about the riders that are coming up through the ranks, Robert, and the programs that are in place. And also that 3.5 years ago, within this last quadrennium, Olympic quadrennium, you were looking forward to what your strategy would be. At what point do you then review that strategy going forwards for Tokyo? And do you have any takeaways that are going to be implemented in that strategy that you can share with us? What does your crystal ball tell you now?
Well, I'll tell you what my crystal ball says right now, that I'm going to take about 2.5 weeks of and have a really great vacation. And, Chris, beyond that, my contract is up this fall. And what I hope to do in the meantime is work on the future strategy for the team and all the programs from the lower to the highest end of the pyramid, and then hopefully help out in whatever way I can to make sure that those programs are implemented in the future.
Well, you certainly underscored your contract for now with that team bronze medal in Rio. Robert, congratulations again. Congratulations, of course, to all the riders. Ali Brock with Roosevelt, Casey Periglass with Doublet, Stefan Peters with Legolas 92, and, of course, Laura Graves with Verdadis. Thank you so much for coming on the program, and congratulations on the bronze medal.
Thanks so much, Chris. I really appreciate it. And I know that the riders will appreciate that you covered it so nicely.
And for anyone interested in Olympic archives, you can find more information on the USDF's new publication, Your Dressage, which is available through the free USDF app, Your Dressage Connection. This new publication features human interest stories from participants throughout the dressage community and is free to everyone. You can download the USDF app and access Your Dressage today. And a reminder that this podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app. And that's it for this week's episode. Be sure to visit eTrack when you're on the USDF website for more educational resources and information. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.